Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 18th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very, very well. And we're also happy to be joined by educator and author, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing,
Mariah? I'm well. How are you?
Good. Well, everyone listening, and I hope that you noticed that we haven't been on the air for the last few weeks, since probably Labor Day, but now we're back and in ready to go. And so we're here to talk. We apologize for the interruption, but we're happy to be back. During the absence, which was actually my absence, I was on travel, a lot of stuff happened. One of the things that happened over this past few weeks was an incident north of Boston in the towns of Andover, North Andover, and Lawrence, right? Mm-hmm. And you, D.R. Mariah, tell me if I get this story right. Sometime late Friday afternoon, the Columbia Gas Company, for whatever reason, through human error or whatever, increased the pressure in the natural gas lines, which started for those towns, which then caused multiple leaks in multiple locations, many of which caught fire, and there was at one point 70 houses on fire in those towns. Right? Is that a fair statement of what happened? Mariah, do you remember? Is that the story of what transpired there a few weeks ago?
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. One death. Miraculously, I mean, any death is too many, but the fact that all those homes caught on fire, I mean, I think if it had been at night and people had been sleeping or whatever. So, the one, it was an 18-year-old boy that died, which is terrible. But I can't believe that it didn't happen to more people.
Yeah. And then I read.
Thank goodness it didn't.
Yeah. I read somewhere that there was this past weekend, which would then now be into mid-October. In Woburn, there was a similar incident and where the pressure spiked by human error in towns in Woburn, and then all of a sudden they basically have put Columbia Gas on notice not to do any more repair work. Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you saw that. But I guess so this incident raises a large number of questions, at least in my mind, and it connects to a lot of the issues that we have talked about on this show. I think the underlying question is there's this technology, this infrastructure that's built that goes through our streets, goes into our homes, goes everywhere, and it basically is pipelines that contain this high-pressure natural gas, right? And I guess I was surprised to think about the fact that these gas lines are fairly highly pressurized. That is to say, there's a lot of that gas wants to escape that line, that pipeline, and at given any chance, it will. And then when they accidentally raise the pressure a few pounds per square inch, all hell broke loose, literally. So I guess the question, D.R., let me put it in your lap. Is there a connection between this incident and the construction of new pipelines that's been encouraged by the utilities in the state? I mean, what's the state of play there?
The obvious connection is that with these new pipelines, we're always told that they're state-of-the-art and they're safe and nothing could ever possibly happen and what could possibly go wrong. And as you see here, there is something that can definitely go wrong with pipelines, and it goes to the sort of to the ultimate human error, which is the increased dependence upon, you know, unreliable and unsafe natural gas as an energy policy in the Commonwealth.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so the Bradley Campbell, the president of the Conservation Law Foundation, said that the tragedy in Merrimack Valley makes it clear that we really need to be weaning ourselves off of natural gas, that this is a system with too many risks and vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And, while a shift away from coal and oil energy production has helped the state of Massachusetts reduce its carbon emissions, which, of course, is the primary driver of global warming, this is according to a Boston Globe article, that there's new research that suggests that natural gas produces more emissions than previously thought, and a lot of, you know, environmentalists, ourselves included, basically say that, you know, expanding natural gas capacity really just sort of keeps us away from shifting more rapidly to renewable energy, which is what we really need.
Right. And I thought in that, so there's this, as you say, the article in the Globe this past Sunday talks about the issue and the focus that this incident in Merrimack Valley has brought. And what I read in the article said, they quote various gas industry people who say, oh, well, you know, the renewable energy isn't ready yet, and we're going to be relying on natural gas for a long time. And the point I was making in my own consideration of the topic is that this, we can't accept unchallenged the assertion of these companies that say, oh, we must rely on natural gas because the renewable energy isn't ready yet. I mean, that's a choice that we're making by not preparing more wind turbines. I mean, we could go that way if we wanted to, but by simply accepting the assertion of the natural gas people that we must rely on natural gas, I mean, it's this closed loop that I find upsetting. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, regulations, you know, if there were regulations that sort of said this is the direction we have to go in toward renewable energy, it spurs innovation. It gets people thinking about the problem and funnels more research money into innovative renewable energy technologies.
I was following this a little bit when it was happening, and there's a gentleman named Nathan Phillips who teaches at, I believe it's BU.
Boston
University. And he was, at least on Twitter, making the case that this was an opportunity to rebuild the towns of North Andover and Lowell on completely electric lines, to electrify everything, right? Because the gas lines, the integrity of all the gas lines in the whole town were suspect, it was all going to have to be replaced. So why not simply leave those dead pipes in the ground and bring into the homes enough electric power and electric appliances so that you didn't need natural gas? And that as a part of that, and also because people were stuck there, still are stuck without heat and power in those towns, he was going to IKEA and buying induction cook plates and distributing them, right? Did you see that, Maria?
I actually have a little bit of an update on that. I think that, so he has a, if you search Nathan Phillips and GoFundMe, that's the program he was doing it for through. I think that IKEA ended up maybe possibly donating a lot of cooktops, or maybe they ended up having enough. And so they've switched it to now, you know, the problem with those induction stoves is that you have to have a metal pot to put on top of it. Now he's raising money to get metal pots to all of these homes so they can use these induction stoves. But either way, I mean, I think you're right that there was somebody, Elizabeth Turnbull, was quoted in the Boston Globe article saying that the only silver lining from this tragedy is that the myriad problems related to our over-reliance on natural gas are now dinner table conversation. I mean, literally, right? People are talking about how they're going to get dinner on the table. And
with their inductive heater, right?
Exactly. So it's definitely a wake-up call. And, you know, I mean, I think that's the first step. Sometimes when I talk about electrifying things, everything, people say, well, but that's still fossil fuels. When the electric grid is still attached to fossil fuels. It is, but we're slowly ratcheting that up to more renewables. And, you know, filling your car with gas is definitely not, renewable, right? So electrifying everything is definitely the first step. And I'd rather cook on an induction stove than have a big potentially exploding gas pipe in my house.
Well, I mean, I also think it's an example of the Naomi Klein shock doctrine kind of discussion. It's to say, you need to be prepared with a plan when the bad thing hits, because then you can just step forward and say, right, here's how we do it. And the examples are things like, the collapse of Russia or Hurricane Katrina, and all the conservative types rushed in with free market zones and stuff like that. I think this effort led by Nathan Phillips is sort of in that line, saying, look, this bad thing happened. The response is, okay, electrify everything, right? Forget the pipes in the ground. That's an old technology. We want to go to this new condition where everyone's using electricity for everything. And that he backed that up with the action of the inductive heating cooktops. Now, whether or not the state picks up on that is secondary, because now, you, in a sense, you've injected into the dinner table conversation the idea that, well, heck, we could just walk away from this leaky gas in thing that's coming into our house, right, and go to something that is potentially cleaner and safer. So I think that's a good thing. It's good on him for having led that effort, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that I guess the other aspect of this that's, so there's a bunch of aspects, but one aspect, I think, so I'm not really that closely familiar with the areas, but between North Andover and South Lawrence, there's a significant economic difference, I think, right? And so the reaction and the impact on some people, I think, was more than others, right? Some people are probably unable to react to go buy an inductive heating plate, right, because of where they, you know, where they live. And so the question is, that's just another example of how these sort of climate-related things fall on the less fortunate perhaps more heavily than anyone else. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I had heard something along those lines too. I mean, even just at the face value of, you know, a lot of people in these towns had been complaining about smelling gas for quite some time. Yeah. And there had been sort of pushing to get that taken care of, and we're sort of basically told, no, that's fine. We're not concerned about it. So
it's literally gaslighting.
Right.
One way to put it.
And, you know, again, if you have a community that has more economic, you know,
clout,
they can push a little harder to make sure those gas leaks are taken care of. And certainly I've heard of communities that have worked together. I know Mothers Out Front has done a ton in Massachusetts to help stop and address gas leaks. I think that was in Jamaica Plain. I'm not positive about that. But at any rate, you know, using that clout to get the gas leaks addressed happens probably more often in more affluent communities than not so affluent communities. So,
I guess the other aspect of it is that this kind of infrastructure, this high pressure distribution system, is part of what the new pipeline proposals are all about. So you may remember the West Roxbury Lateral, which was the pipeline built near the quarry in West Roxbury that is now underground and operational, but people were getting arrested there probably just last summer. I mean, that's also a high-pressure distribution system, which is subject to the same kinds of risks of having as the pipelines up on the North Shore. And so the pipelines that are proposed to be built through Massachusetts are of the same kind of technology. DR, I think you made reference to this, the same kind of high pressure technology. And the question is, does any of us want that in our homes? And is this experience on the North Shore reason enough to oppose those pipelines, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just keep thinking about this poor boy that died, you know, sitting in his car, he died in the you know, tragedy. And I just think, you know, like, we don't want that to happen to anyone ever again. I mean, this there could have been nothing more innocent than what this guy kid was doing, right? I mean, he was just in his driveway at his home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I feel like we should all be out on the street saying, that's enough, you know? I mean, like, let's not let this ever happen again. And let's move to a safer energy source. But,
well, I think the discussion, and I'm sure many other people agree with you, Mariah. I mean,
yeah.
I think that it's a question. It's a question of becoming conscious of what's at play, right? And where you have a statement and formulating your opinion about whether or not these new pipelines are worthwhile. This is not a good thing for Columbia, well, for the gas industry in general, right?
Right. And I mean, you never want to capitalize on a tragedy, so to speak, but this is definitely one of those things where you're like, look, you know, they say it's safe, but we see otherwise, and this is how we had to see it. We had to experience this to say, wow, this is not great. We had to lose a life for us to say, no, this actually isn't a great, you know, source. You know, the iron is hot, I guess, in some ways.
It's sort of like how the Three Mile Island accident sort of begat the anti-nuclear power movement, and how that was a sort of a galvanizing incident for a lot of people to basically say, you know, let's think twice about nuclear power.
Right. Well, I think we should think twice about natural gas, and this is a prime example. So, all right, so we'll put that down. We'll keep an eye on this whole thing because it's an ongoing question up on the North Shore, and we hope the people in it's Andover, South Lawrence, and the third town, I forget.
North Andover.
Okay. Yeah. We hope that they're back on their feet soon and can put this behind them and that they all have electric power in their homes. All right, kids. What I'll do is we'll put up links to at least some of what we talked about on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. We'll put it up on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can find this show on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, all those places, especially on Apple Podcasts, the mother load for podcasts. We'll close the way we'll always have closed, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Mariah, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. It's good to be back. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.